Well, world shares were largely steady today after recent weakness as we saw a drop in oil prices on bets that Saudi Arabia may boost production, certainly helping balance concerns over surging inflation and monetary policy tightening. Well, we've got the outcome now of that OPEC meeting, and it's a few more barrels, but not enough. Anthea Gardner, managing partner, Cartesian Capital, is our market watcher tonight. Anthea, what stood out for you?
Good evening, Michael. Very muted day, I'm afraid. I think everyone is just sitting on the sidelines. There's a whole lot of stuff that people are waiting to, or waited, I should say, to hear news about, OPEC being one of them. We also saw the U.S. initial jobless claims fall 11,000, seasonally adjusted to 200,000 last week. They were expecting 210. So now everyone's kind of talking about what happens with non-farm payrolls for May, which are due tomorrow and expected to have increased by 325,000. And they're expecting the unemployment rate to fall to 3.5% in May.
Wow.
And then just this afternoon, we had Brainerd coming out and saying, from the Fed, saying that there's just no reason to pause hiking, the hiking cycle, and that fighting inflation is their number one priority.
Mm.
You know, and I think that really has got everyone just kind of watching what's going on and where to from here. And recently, JP Morgan lowered their U.S. growth outlook for the second half of 2022 from 3% to 2.4%. So just really not great news.
And Jamie Dimon likening what's coming to a hurricane. Janet Yellen earlier in the week saying, well, we probably misread inflation a little bit. A little bit? Well, quite a lot. There's a lot of humble pie being eaten around the place. OPEC Plus, Saudi Arabia and other OPEC Plus states agreed to bring forward oil production rises to offset obvious Russian output losses. Is it enough? It said it agreed to boost output by 648,000 barrels a day. It's around 0.7% of global demand. Is this enough? If you look at the oil price, probably not.
No, I don't think. I think the announcement was a bit of a disappointment. People were expecting more. Really, they're accelerating the end of the current quota arrangement, which was in place in July last year, and just bringing it forward, right? So this increase per day, really not great. They also kept Russia in the cartel, which was interesting because I think everyone was expecting them to say something about that.
Yeah.
And I can't complain, really, that they're increasing oil output because, really, the petrol price in South Africa is so high. But, Michael, that isn't the only problem. There's also a refining bottleneck that is really keeping the petrol and diesel price quite high. So, yes, I think OPEC does need to do a bit more than it agreed to do today.
That's a very important point, that the fact that you can drill, you can pump, but if you can't refine this stuff, you're not going to be able to get it to market as well. And that is another part of the oil value chain that is under significant pressure. Looking back through May, Brent crude is probably the asset class that stands out year to date, 55.5% year to date. What else really stood out for you in May?
So in the local market, there were a couple of big moves, you know. Globally, the MSCI World Index was actually flat in May, which still means it's down 12.8% year to date and really not a great number for us kind of almost halfway through the year. Our market, bond currency markets, held their own, I must say, despite we saw quite large outflows, real lack of demand for the domestic bond auctions that happened. And actually, the bond market does feel a bit illiquid to me at the moment.
Mm.
And then in May, the big kind of standout moves, Goldfields, down 29.7%.
Oh.
That was just an incredible shocker. In fact, all the gold mining shares really down. Harmony 17.7, Anglo Gold Ashanti 16.7, you know, DRD 16.4. Just really not a good look for the precious metals in May.
I'm going to be writing about the Goldfields deal for my column for Business Day next week after having a conversation with Nick Holland. And I really rate Nick Holland, the former CEO, very highly. And so did many analysts out there. And I said, Nick, you know, what do you think of this? Clearly, there's dilution up front. The market has sold off Goldfields on the back of the premium. And obviously, there's some execution risk. But effectively, Goldfields is securing its future for the next 25 years. And he said, Michael, this is what we did 20 years ago in Australia. And he's very, very happy with the transaction, very comfortable with the premium that's being paid. But there is still a big bet on where the gold price goes from here. I want to move on, though, to capital appreciation's results. And really, just like when you look at a company and it says firing on all cylinders, have a look at the capital appreciation results, because that really that's what springs to mind across every division.
Absolutely. And in this environment. So, I mean, the only thing I can think really is that people are focusing on their cloud computing. They're focusing on software, hardware. I just can't explain it any other way. I mean, headline earnings per share up 29.6%. Their terminal sales up 51%. Their software division revenue up 34%. It's just nonstop. And then, of course, a nice little 73% increase in their dividend. So they did say they benefited from a significant increase in cloud-based and digital consulting revenue and third-party software and hardware sales. So I guess that's kind of where it is, you know, in the cloud and computing.
It's in a sweet spot, isn't it? And it's been ever since COVID, businesses are digitalizing their processes. They're moving into the cloud and realizing that you can throttle up and throttle down and, you know, software as a service and all of that as and when you need it. You don't have to fork out millions on your own infrastructure and hardware. And they really are well positioned, capital appreciation, in that space. And they also announced, Brad Sachs, that their lead independent director, Mr. Meir Khan, passed away last night. He was in his 80s, but will go down as one of the doyens of business in South Africa as a former chair of SAB Miller.
For so many years as well. I think he certainly, you can definitely put him down as a bit of a legend in the industry.
And the thing about Meir Khan, I recall back in 2012, he stood down from the chairmanship of SAB Miller. He chose not to go with Graham Mackay to London when they moved their HQ. He was known as the boy key from Brits. He was very forthright and frank. And at the time, he was calling out the administration for corruption. And I recall Raul Khoza, then chairman of Nedbank, being chopped off at the knees for coming out and doing the same thing. So standing tall when it wasn't very popular or brave to do so. So well, our thoughts are certainly with Mr. Khan's family at a very difficult time. Then interesting to see a note from Investec this morning talking about Suntum and the 500 million rand in net retained losses. That was certainly a big negative surprise to the market. What do we read through the Suntum results? Obviously, with weather dynamics, what's going on in KZN, it's very, very difficult for insurers at the moment.
Indeed, I think it's worth pointing out that their gross exposure to the KZN floods was around 3.2 billion rand, and that the reinsurers are likely to pick up the balance of the tab, leaving them with 500 million rand. You know, they did call it a 1-in-25-year event or natural catastrophe, or the largest, I should say, natural catastrophe in their history. And even these results, what they put out today, didn't include the impact of the second round of floods in KZN, which means I think that there's more to come in the next reporting cycle. I think the market was very shocked, kind of horrified by what they heard from Suntum today.
Yeah, and I think for investors, it just bears repeating that these are the kinds of risks when we talk about ESG that are starting to factor into your investment thesis. But we're also going to be talking about the other side of ESG later today, and that's greenwashing. There's been a lot of that going on and a lot of litigation around funds who've been using ESG to market products that are really downright misleading. Anthea Gardner, thank you very much. Managing Partner at Cartesian Capital with your view from the markets here on Hot Business.